When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Now we got a guy calling in who's just become the new defensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Rams. Coach Raheem Morris joins us on the show today. Coach, what's happening? How you doing? It's Rodney Pete and David Vasse.
Man, I'm so ecstatic to talk to one of the all-time legends at the quarterback position. The guy who, when I got in the league, had just finishing up at Carolina and getting it done, and getting it done for years, and a guy that I've cheered for my whole career, man. I'm so excited to talk to you in L.A. I can't tell you. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're great. Thanks for that intro. It's just like I texted you to read it, man. I appreciate it.
Did you know how great of a baseball player Rodney was, Coach?
I do actually. You know, I know he played baseball when he was younger. I know he's a really good pitcher, and I know he could do a lot of good things. But you know, I was really interested in his football prowess because I watched him at so many different teams from Detroit, from all over the place, to bounce around a little bit, and ended it in 2002, my first year in the league. He was ended at Carolina when I first got to Tampa, so that was exciting to see and just to know. Who was across from you?
Yeah, no, that was the great way to finish out with Carolina, and we go head to head a couple years. Speaking of that, you got your first. Let's go back a little bit because you got a head coaching job with those Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the young age of 32. Take us back, Coach, when you got the job because John Gruden had just been released of his duties there. You got the job. What was that like for you? And were you ready for it? Did you expect it? Talk about what that was like, that first experience being a head coach.
You know, when it first happened, to say that you're ever ready for those type of positions, you probably never know until you get in front of it and get behind the desk to actually do those things. That a long time ago, people told me when you become a head coach, there's a big tube that's over your desk, and everything that falls in your desk is your job and your responsibility. And that tube was wide open that year. On your desk, you get things that you don't even know that you're in charge of. You get things on your desk that you feel like you've been preparing for your whole life and you're ready to deal with. And at the end of the day, at secondary thoughts, you can actually go out and coach the game that you love and play some football. But when all those things happened, man, it was a whirlwind. It happened fast. I just got promoted to defensive coordinator with John Gruden. I just got called in and told that they were going to be relieving John Gruden and Bruce Allen from their jobs, who were dear and near to my heart as far as my career, my development, and what I've become, and they wanted me to become the head coach. And nothing really got me ready to do that until I got the text from John Gruden telling me to go get it done. And once he texted me that, I knew what type of game it was, and I knew what I needed to do in order to put myself in position to have success with being a head coach. Was fortunate enough to be the head coach for 3 years, had one really good year where I was fortunate enough to get 10 wins with that great group and those great group of guys, and had been the best record they've had up until this year, until they won it all again. There was nothing better than calling those guys and congratulating those owners and the people that gave me an opportunity at a very young age.
Coach, that is so cool, that story about Bruce Allen and John Gruden. And I'm curious, as you move forward in your successful coaching career, what did you take away from your time with John Gruden, and what part of John Gruden is still with Raheem Morris?
You know, John Gruden, when you're talking about him, man, you got to talk about the love for the game. The love for the game came out of everything that he's always done. Whether you're talking about installing an offense, whether you're talking about an offseason having fun with his staff, or you're talking about him being the announcer and just going out there and announcing to the world when he was on Monday Night Football, his excitement to come back into football and be able to coach for the Las Vegas Raiders and to do those things and to move people the way he moves them, his excitement, his energy, his ability to connect with everybody in the audience as far as a communication standpoint, I thought was one of the things that I've taken from him because he was absolutely dynamic every Wednesday morning when I talked to him.
Yeah, he's a guy that never sleeps, and I know this firsthand. When he first got to Philadelphia, he would text me and call me on his way in. It'd be like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm saying, I'm not getting there until another 3 hours. What are you doing texting me on your way into work? But he was that guy and still is that guy. Now, you're coming off another situation where you took over for Dan Quinn in Atlanta. You brought some life into a team that was struggling a little bit. But now you inherit the number one defense in the league in the L.A. Rams. How excited are you? And when you look at this team, especially on defense, what excites you most?
You know, I don't even know if it's just the number of them being the number one defense. I think it's the number of them having the number one, you know, people in positions that can make things happen. Because obviously you look at it, you see AD. Obviously you look at it, you see Jalen Ramsey. You see two top-tier players, two future, hopefully, gold jacket people and people wearing gold jackets. But the people around them, all the guys that have been able to make plays happen around them, I think the most important factors of it all. You know, when you won your championships and you've been able to be around championship teams like we were when we were in Tampa, and you're around Derek Brooks, you're around Warren Sapp, you're around now John Lynch, gold jacket people, the people that really stood out were the Rondé Barbers of the world, the Brian Kellys of the world, the people that are right there on the cusp of potentially being gold jacket people, and the people out there that just made themselves elevate to a whole different spot in their career. So when I walk around the building, I get a chance to see some of the young players here that have the ability to elevate themselves around these great two players. And to make themselves great and to make themselves in these conversations, I think those are the things that excite me the most about being an L.A. Ram.
Coach, when you look at the team that you have and that defense that you have, what do you do when you come in this situation where they had so much success? Do you try to continue what they did last year? Do you stay out of the way? How do you coach these guys up to another level?
You always want to do what your great players do really well. And, you know, we all know Aaron Donald. He does a great job in almost everything, but particularly putting his hands in places, getting off the ball, being disruptive as much in the quarterback as you can. You want to put him in a position to do that. And with Jalen, you want to provide him challenges. You want to give him the ability to follow people. You want to give him the ability to put him inside, play him all over the place. So he provides mental warfare in the quarterback as well. When you're using those type of players, you're going to do what they do really well. And when you come into a system and you inherit a system like this, you want to do some of the things that they've done really well with your spin on it. So it's not a me show. It's not an I show. It's going to continue to be a we show here at the Rams. And these guys have done a great job of putting it all together and being a we show for a long time. This defense has been good before last year, just last year. They've been in the process of growing to be great. You know, now is at the point where you want to grow and be great and win a championship. And the only way you should define yourself on next year is how much you win and how much you go and put yourself in a position to win a championship.
Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris joins us on the show. Coach, I want to talk about, because you just mentioned a few guys, and you've been around the league a long time. You've coached some great teams and some great defenses. You're in another one now. If you're starting and building a defense, where would you start? Where do you start? What's the most important thing for you? Is it Aaron Donald getting somebody up front that can dominate, can take on double teams and really put the offensive line at risk? Or is it a lockdown corner that can shut off a half of a field? Or is it linebackers that can diagnose plays, diagnose an offense, and go sideline to sideline? Where do you start if you were building from scratch a perfect defense?
You know, like the old saying, which we always say, which is true and blue on defense, is it starts up front. And I've been fortunate enough to be around arguably, you know, two of the best three technique or one or a few or a handful of the best three techniques to ever play the game now. And Warren Sapp and now Aaron Donald, you know, and I had a really good one in Atlanta with Grady Jarrett, you know, so you get a chance to be around those guys. You would love for it to start up front, but as you build your way through the defense, everybody wants a lockdown corner, and coming into the Rams, you're so fortunate to have the lockdown corner of maybe our generation and our next decade leading us forward here to be one of those guys to be recognized as an all-time great and that what he can do and what he brings to the table. But again, man, it starts up front. And the more you can get those guys up front hunting after the quarterback, I think that's the most important part of our game. As you know, as being the quarterback, the thing that you can affect is when you have a matchup up front that you just can't deal with protection, and you're dependent on somebody to beat that man one-on-one, and those guys can't come through for you. That takes you out of all your checks. That takes you out of all your progressions, all the things that you want to do, and it makes you uncomfortable as a quarterback. And our most important job is to get the guys uncomfortable. So you got to say it starts up front.
Yeah, no, I would say that on both sides of the ball. As a quarterback, I'm saying take care of me up front first. and then we can worry about it. we can worry about everything else. Coach, I want to ask you too about, you know, your situation. I know you just got the job here at the Rams as defense coordinator, but you come from a tree. You come from the John Gruden tree, as we've seen around the league in the last few years. There's a lot of coaches that were a part of Gruden's staff at some point that are now head coaches that have evolved, and they're calling it the Sean McVay tree now. But as you look back, and you were head coach for in Tampa Bay, are you looking forward to another opportunity to become a head coach? As we're seeing turnover happen all the time in the NFL, are you looking forward to that opportunity?
You know, it's funny, Roddy. You know, you go about your daily business, and that's not necessarily what your goal is. Your goal is to be the best defensive coordinator you can possibly be. And then usually those things take care of themselves. You know, if I can go out here and live in the moment and be the best defensive coordinator for the LA Rams, you know, I believe that those things and those personal goals will come, and you'll have opportunities to do those things. You know, this year I was fortunate enough to interview for two head coaching opportunities, you know, the one I just left in Atlanta and then also down in Jacksonville. And those things happen. But if you do a good job, you create the right culture, you get around the right people, you know, all those things will happen for you in time. You know, obviously we do have a minority issue in the National Football League with head coaches being hired and the guys that get hired, the guys that get opportunities. But I fortunately can't say that because of my opportunity that I got at a very young age. And I do believe those things will happen again or come around again when the time is right.
Coach, one more for you, and everything that you said is so true. There's got to be more opportunities for minorities head coaching football teams in the NFL. I just don't understand how that doesn't happen more. But also something I don't understand is how come Aaron Donald does not get as much love as some of these quarterbacks out there? You know, every guys like yourselves talk about him in the same breath as Lawrence Taylor. When Lawrence Taylor was playing, he got a lot of shine. Everybody just says, yeah, Aaron Donald's a beast. He dominates. But this has turned into something where we only care about quarterbacks and receivers. How does Aaron Donald start to – how do we change the narrative out there that this guy is having maybe even a bigger
–
he's a bigger impact than a quarterback?
You know, in my opinion, you know, the way Aaron Donald and the way the LA Rams change the narrative is going out and doing everything we can to put ourselves in position to win Aaron Donald and the LA Rams the Super Bowl. And once you do those things, the narrative changes. You know, you're talking about the greatest player on the greatest team. He won't be denied. You're talking about putting that guy in a position that that ranks him in the Lawrence Taylor days, that ranks him in the Goddard days, that where people absolutely know and is common knowledge across all football fans that he may be the best player in our game. A lot of guys in this game, we all know it, having the unfortunate, however you want to look at it, way to have to game plan against him from an offensive standpoint. You know, when I was a receiver coach in Atlanta, he's a problem. He's a problem that you constantly got to work about, that you guys got to worry about, whether you're talking about run or pass. And I believe all the coaches, I believe all the people that know football, I believe all the people that are really into what we do, they recognize him that way. You're talking about making everybody recognize him from an outside standpoint. That hadn't seen him watch, hadn't seen him win a Super Bowl, hadn't seen him lift the Lombardi Trophy on the biggest stage. And I think those people will start to know once you see that.
Well, Coach, welcome to L.A. Best of luck to you. And when we are able to go hang out and have dinner, the first dinner is on me.
I love it, man. I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
You got it. There he goes.
All right.
Raheem Morris.
Sports.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know this.
Miami
Dave.
Sound Machine remix right here, Rodney.
Yeah, you know this one, Dave.
Come on.
The Ford F-150, the best-selling full-size pickup in California. Visit your local Southern California Ford dealer today or go to buyfordnow.com and schedule a test drive. Yeah, this brings back some memories, Dave. Those of us of a certain age.
Yeah, you know, I dabbled with the Miami Sound Machine. I wouldn't say it was at the top of my list, but I dabbled. Yeah.
It'd do something to you a little bit.
If it came on at Yankee Doodles in Woodland Hills,
there you go.
When I was about 23, you know, there make you it go. Happen.
There you go. Let's bring on another guy that makes it happen, our Laker insider and the Laker beat writer for The Athletic and also the host of the Forum Club podcast, our man, Bill Orem. Bill, how you doing?
Maybe he's in the Forum Club.
Yeah, the Forum Club.
You know, Dave, the form, as we try to get Bill with some technical issues, but the form club, Dave, I don't know if you remember back in the day, but boy, the form club had, they had some memories, or at least I had some memories.
Oh, I bet you did. I heard a little bit of it. Yeah. I caught the tail end, Rodney. I actually saw Kobe Bryant in there with his sisters when he was in his first year with the Lakers. They had to escort him in because
he was young.
He was 18.
Yeah.
He actually saw, I was wearing his jersey. I was like a sophomore in high school. I was wearing his jersey the first year. Or actually, I was 2 years out of high school. Yikes. I was still wearing basketball jerseys. And he signed his jersey for me. That was my first encounter with Kobe Bryant in the Form Club.
What a beautiful relationship. And we bring him on now. Bill Oram, thanks for joining us, man. We're talking about your podcast name, The Form Club, and how it brings back memories.
You guys, this is the best intro I've ever gotten because nobody talks this much about my – I don't even talk this much about my podcast, so I really appreciate it.
Well, Rodney used to come out of the Forum Club, and it was daylight.
Hey!
Yeah.
Dave, you don't lie. It was better than any nightclub in town,
yeah.
The Forum Club. It was fantastic. I digress. All right, Bill. They lose 3 out of 4, meaning the Lakers, without AD still, without Dennis Schroeder. If Fred was here, I'd ask him where he is on the meter, and he'd probably still try to say green, even though inside he'd be red. Is there reason for concern or alarm right now?
I don't think there's reason for alarm, but I think there are things to pay attention to. And I wrote a story today that kind of got into a little bit of this. I mean, you can extrapolate some danger scenarios for the Lakers right now. And one of them is you're not very good without LeBron James on the floor. And that is something that every LeBron James team has ever dealt with. But obviously those units are better when you have Anthony Davis to carry the load while LeBron's on the bench. Now you've got the Lakers kind of falling into bigger holes when LeBron's on the bench. There's a great example from their last game in the third quarter. They cut the lead. They cut Miami's lead to 1. LeBron checks out. He sits down for 3 minutes, and when he comes back in, the Lakers are down 10. So what he has to do is basically he has to be kind of a driving force to get them either a lead or close to a lead. Then he checks out. They fall behind again. Then he has to do it all again. And so to me, the concern would be if this stretch without Anthony Davis over the next month ends up taking such a toll on LeBron that he doesn't have enough gas in the tank by the time he gets to playoffs. That would be the concern. But what I would say to reassure Laker fans is that LeBron has never had that problem. Like the idea of LeBron running out of gas has never really materialized at the end of a season. This is the kind of conversation we've been having about LeBron for almost 20 years. Like, whoa, you know, can he do it? And he almost always can. He knows how to self-regulate. He knows how to take care of his body. And you know, he knows how to kind of, you know, pace himself so he's prepared for the end of the season. So I think what you're more likely going to see is rather than LeBron overexert himself to keep the Lakers in the two hole in the West right now, I think there's a better chance you're going to see the Lakers slip down to 4th, 5th, maybe 6th in the West over the next month, and then need to do some work over the last couple months of the season to get back up to 3rd or 4th in the West and enter the playoffs with a lower seed. And then I guess the question is, do you think it matters that the Lakers aren't going to be the 1 seed in the playoffs if my theory ends up holding true? And I don't think it does. I think in this year, more than ever, it does not matter what seed you are, and especially the Lakers are, as long as they go into the playoffs healthy. I don't see a team in the West that, you know, they wouldn't be favored against in the postseason, even if they were the 4 seed playing the 1 seed. I don't think that the seeding is what's going to determine whether or not the Lakers can win a playoff series.
Hey, Bill, on that line, in terms of LeBron and what we're going to see from him, you look at last night, and or was it the other night? I'm not sure what they're all running together, but he gets the steal. He gets the steal at the end of the game, and Alex Caruso has a wide open shot to send it to overtime, and if he steps back and hits a three, he's got a chance for them to win it. How much of it is other guys needing to step up? Because it seems like they're not shooting the ball, and facts will show that. They're not shooting the ball very well right now, and guys are getting opportunities, but they're not falling, or it's not going through for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no better shot creator in the NBA than LeBron, right, in terms of creating opportunities for teammates. And, you know, I'm glad you asked that question, because I thought we were going down the path of whether or not LeBron should have taken the shot at the end of the game, whether he's too unselfish. And I kind of thought we'd put that one to bed, you know, 15 years ago. So I'm glad we're not having that conversation. This has been a problem. The Lakers started the season the first month red hot from three. KCP was shooting like 47%. Kyle Kuzma was shooting close to 40%. LeBron was shooting a career high percentage. And Alex Caruso led the league in three-point percentage for a while. That's all fallen off. You know, they're down near the bottom in three-point shooting over the last month. That's a problem with for a Lake. Any LeBron James team, in order to be successful, has to have great shooting around him. That has been the recipe to success with LeBron's championship teams over the years. The Lakers developed into a great three-point shooting team by the end of the playoffs last year. They were hot at the right time, and so I think that in order for this team to repeat, they're going to have to figure it out from three. But I mean, I guess the thing is, things tend to return to the mean. KCP is not going to be a 0% three-point shooter, which is what it feels like he's been over the last month. You're gonna have Wesley Matthews shooting the ball better. You're gonna have Anthony Davis who has a good three-point shot when he elects to use it. So I think the Lakers are going to be fine. I think they're going to recover from this stretch, but it is getting into a point where it's a large enough sample size that you're starting to worry, because it's really been since the beginning of January.
Bill, since we have avoided trade talk so far, I want to bring that up. is there any other Clutch Sports clients out there that can help the Lakers? Because that's who they like, right?
Let's see, Clutch clients. Well, Draymond Green didn't seem too happy the other night. But, the Lakers, I don't know that I see the Lakers making anything – any sizable disruptive moves to this roster. I know, people are interested in Andre Drummond. The Lakers would have to, send a lot out to bring back a player like that, a player who's making that kind of money. And I just don't see them taking three or four pieces out of this lineup to bring back one player. I know I think you could definitely argue that there's issues with the front court. Marc Gasol has been, I think a disappointment so far this year. And so, could you get an upgrade at center, or even just bolstering your depth? There's been some thought that, Blake Griffin would make sense if he gets bought out in Detroit. And I think that's where you're going to see them be the most active, is on the buyout market. When you see guys, get out of their previous situations. The Lakers had one of the best buyout pickups, in memory last year with Markieff Morris, and his contributions in the postseason as a role player. So I don't think we're going to be talking about the Lakers adding another, starter caliber player this year, but you could see them add, a third center or somebody who can come in certain matchups and make a difference. But the Blake Griffin thing is definitely interesting. I know also there's been some question about DeMarcus Cousins, who's on his way out in Houston. Obviously the Lakers have a relationship with DeMarcus. He was really well liked.
How many games did he play last year?
Zero, but he was really well liked, and he's getting a championship ring for being well liked. But the point is, the Lakers liked him. I do not think there's a fit this year. I would be just astonished if they brought DeMarcus Cousins back, because he doesn't fit what they need in the front court.
I was telling Rodney they should go the Shaq route and rest Anthony Davis up until a month before the playoffs. Do you believe that they may go that route, and how concerned are they about his Achilles snapping?
I think, the dialogue out of the Lakers organization has been that they think he'll be ready to be back on the court in a month. And so that includes like all his ramp up and the necessary practices to get himself, back up to speed, physically. So I think, right now they don't seem to be that concerned about it, because I think if you're talking about an Achilles, that actually seems to be a fairly aggressive timeline. So if he's back on the floor in March, I think that's an indication that they have 100% confidence in his calf and that tendon area. Because listen, you're talking about a 27-year-old player who's in the first year of a 5-year maximum contract. The Lakers are not screwing around with him this year in any way, shape, or form. So I think, if there's any concern about the Achilles actually being at risk, I don't think they'll be putting him out there. And the fact that they gave a timeline, by the way, I thought was telling. Because if this was something that they wanted to be extra cautious with and didn't want to create any expectations, they would say he'd be reevaluated in a month, or they'd say 4 to 6 weeks, something like that, and then over deliver right on that timeline. The fact that they said they think he's gonna be ready to go in 4 months, and now granted it's an estimate, it's always couched a little bit, but I thought it was really telling that they actually provided a timeline, which to me speaks to the confidence they have that he's gonna be ready to go at full strength.
Our insider, Bill Orem, joins us. He's also the host of the Forum Club podcast, which we know and love, and had to bring back a bunch of memories. Bill, so we talk a lot about AD being out and what that means. How big a difference is Dennis Schroeder being out, and is this a missed opportunity for him to get to get more minutes, but also to kind of be that other scorer that they seem to be missing right now?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is the Lakers played one game with Schroeder after AD was ruled out for, you know, the long term, you know, or guess not that really a long term injury, but for the next month. And Frank Vogel staggered LeBron James and Dennis Schroeder's minutes the same way that he used to stagger LeBron and AD's minutes, meaning either LeBron James or Dennis Schroeder was on the court for the entire game at Minnesota. And you could see that he was basically sort of setting up Dennis Schroeder to be that second dominant scorer, that second piece of the offense. Well, now with no Dennis Schroeder, the guy that who was kind of filling that role as you know, being the guy who's always on the court if LeBron isn't, is Alex Caruso. And he doesn't do the same thing by any stretch. I mean, he's not a scorer. He's not, you know, he's not going to go get you 20 points. And so, you know, there's a drop off in terms of what the options are offensively for the Lakers. And while this team was designed to have either LeBron or Anthony Davis on the floor at all times, it is much better set up to sustain an injury to Anthony Davis than it is to, I mean, this maybe I'm stating the obvious, than to Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. Because I think you can get through a stretch without AD if you have Schroeder. If you take Schroeder away, the offensive options for this team get pretty dicey pretty quick. And I think the good news is, and we don't have a firm timeline on Schroeder, but there is still optimism that he'll be back in two more games. And so, you know, for the bulk of this stretch without AD, hopefully you do have Dennis Schroeder and maybe things even out a little bit and you don't continue to crater like they have been over the last couple games.
Bill, the big acquisition for the Lakers in the offseason was not only Schroeder, but Montrezl Harrell, Clutch Sports. I was curious. I was curious.
Are you represented by Clutch Sports, Dave?
Yeah, well, there's about seven guys on the team with that agency affiliation. You don't usually see that. I was going to ask you about the Lakers and how they feel Montrezl has fit in. Is it the way they thought he would? Are they a little disappointed that the defense hasn't been better? Where are they with him?
I mean, I think they're really happy with him. I think he has given them what they expected. I mean, his defensive liabilities are well known, and that's why he was available for the mid-level exception last year. You know, the Lakers aren't expecting him to come in and be the answer defensively in a lot of these matchups. I mean, he's their role guy. He's the guy who's going to come in and get you points and energy at that big man spot. You know, you go back to those overtime games they played last week. You know, they were really sapped for energy. There were several examples of Montrez being the guy who was creating extra opportunities on the offensive glass, getting dunks early in one of those overtimes. I mean, they all ran together after a while, but you know, kind of setting the tone. And I think he's continued to do that. You know, you're not going to probably play him down the stretch in playoff games against the other great big men in the Western Conference. But theoretically, you have Marc Gasol for that. I think, if anything, you know, Montrezl Harrell has fit into the role the Lakers expected for him. If anything, I mean, Marc Gasol's been the disappointment. I know he's a lower-paid free agent, but in terms of, you know, him, what he needs to do to kind of space the floor and defend, you know, he hasn't really made as much of a mark as you would have expected. And the shot has started to come a little bit over the last couple of games, and you hope that continues. But he's just looked a step slow out there. And so I'm going to be curious to see how Frank Vogel continues to use him.
Well, Bill, you've never been a step slow. We appreciate you jumping on, man. Appreciate the insight as always.
Thanks, Bill.
I mean, that's because I never came stumbling out of the Forum Club at 10 a.m.
Hey, then you don't deserve that name for your podcast if you haven't ever done that.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Your world champion Dodgers take on the Oakland A's this Sunday for the first spring training game of 2021 season with the first pitch at 12:05. Catch the game right here on your home of the Dodgers, AM 570 LA Sports, or stream the game in HD for free on the iHeartRadio app, brought to you by Chef Marito Seasonings, the official seasoning partner of the Dodgers. It's not a true Mexican dish without Chef Marito. Visit your local grocery store or chefmarito.com.
You have the power to change perception.
Celebrating Black History Month.
To inspire and empower the true beauty and strength that's inside all of us.
KLAC KYSR HD2 Los Angeles. An iHeart radio station. AM 570. An LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peterson.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peterson.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
Oh, yeah, and we continue on. It is flying by. You know, when we get the barbecue brothers together,
it is
nothing but fun, and the time just flies, Dave.
It's hot like a barbecue. That's hot. What a barbecue's all about, fun and hot times, Rodney.
It ain't no mild barbecue sauce, Dave. This is hot. Hot sauce.
Hey, is our guy there? He knows about barbecues. He loves to eat. All right. Rodney, you know him. You love him.
Yes.
LA's favorite son played all 12 of his major league seasons with the Dodgers from 2006 all the way until the World Series in 2017. By the way, the only Dodger to drive in a run in Game 7 of the World Series in 2017. That is the one and only Andre Ethier. Dre, thanks a lot for calling in. I know it was because of Rodney.
Well, of course. I said, Dave usually have me on, but I said, nah, not today. But he said, hey, Rodney's on, and I'll gladly hop on. Two pro athletes talking together, former pro athletes.
Oh, okay. He loves the big names, Rodney. He loves the big names.
That's my man right there.
How you doing, Rodney?
That's my man right there. Dre, how you doing, man? How is retirement? How's Arizona? How's everything going for you, brother?
It's going great. Having a great time. Only thing I could say I'm missing from my life is my chance to go out there and hang out with the team for a couple weeks in spring. But understandably so, those guys are in their bubble back, you know, back again in that bubble to get this season going for the team and, you know, for the fans. I'm looking, you know, more forward to that than anything is get a chance to see a full season of Dodger baseball back together.
Yeah, Dre, people ask me this all the time about what do I miss, and a lot of times, you know, you don't miss the daily grind, but you certainly miss the clubhouse, the locker room, getting with the guys. At this time of year, do you still feel like that itching? Though this is kind of cool, getting ready to start spring training, and for me, it was training camp. It's just kind of getting everybody back together again. Do you miss that part of the game?
Oh, 100%. That's why you know, last year when I went back and went for spring, the clubhouse staff there, instead of putting me in the coaches or guest instructors locker room, they actually stuck me in the middle of the locker room with all the players. You know, for my locker for spring training as a, you know, guest instructor. So they know, and I like hanging around those guys, like being mixing up with them. And, yeah, that's the biggest thing you missed is, you know, sitting there in the locker room in the morning, you know, having some of the conversations and just getting this, you know, hear some of the things that are going on in there, you know, jazz back and forth between me and Kenley, you know, what's going on, you know, just stuff like that you miss in your – you know, when you're out of the game and stuff like that. So that's the probably the part you know, I enjoy the most when I get a chance to go back and be a part of that.
Hey, Rodney, that's his version. They plopped his locker right next to his little brother from Arizona State, Austin Barnes. I don't think Barnes ever went back to his locker the rest of spring.
Well, they wanted to tell him that they were out of lockers and the coaches were, but really the equipment staff wanted to just give Austin a hard time.
Hey, Andre, all right. I saw Trevor Bauer come in with a GoPro the other day.
Uh-oh.
If Andre Ethier's sitting at his locker and the new guy shows up with a GoPro, what's your first response?
First of all, I would ask him, hey, what's your intentions with this? I need to do a little research and see. I really don't have a problem with it. I understand. You know, that's a great part about, you know, some of the ways the game, sports, social media has kind of morphed and come together is to add some of this access, you know, not only from the controlled views of, you know, whether the team's doing it or a certain media member, but actually from the players and the athletes' perspective. And I totally can respect that and see what Trevor's doing. But, you know, hey, what's going on? What are you doing with it? Obviously, when we're in that clubhouse and we're saying, we're talking, we're doing stuff, that's a kind of a sanctuary there. So you got to respect guys' privacy and just make sure you're not, you know, you're not getting anything or posting anything that could jeopardize anyone, you know, on, you know, when you're trying to do it on your behalf. So that'd be the biggest thing for me, is just, you know, respecting every player's privacy in there, every player's right to have, you know, that locker room, that sanctuary be held the way it is. I mean, Roddy, you got to feel the same way. You know, those locker rooms,
yeah,
in the NFL there, once you get back there with your teammates, your brothers, it's kind of your own time to be able to say, talk, do whatever you want, and have that, you know, that locker room so-and-so talk.
Yeah, no doubt. It's such a sacred place, that, and you want to keep it that way. I can remember guys getting in fights because certain things that were said in the locker room got back to other guys' wives, and they discussed it. And the only way it could get back was because somebody in the locker room spilled the beans. And so you're right. It is a sacred place. And on that level, Dre, you want to make sure, the first and foremost, too, that the guys are serious, or the guy is serious about playing. And when it's between the lines and it's time to work, that it's time to work, and it doesn't become a distraction.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's basically, this isn't Cincinnati anymore. This isn't Cleveland. This is L.A. A lot of expectations. A lot of things come with that. There's already a ton of, you know, more increased media coverage. Now being the highest paid, you know, single contract in Major League history, that's on top of it. But at the same time, I guess to defend the guy, he's proved the last couple of years to be able to handle all these social media blitz and things he's gotten into, and keep stepping up and doing his thing. So, you know, as a player, as a teammate, as a guy, you know what you're getting. You don't really want to disrupt that either. I think from that point, if that's what makes the guy drive and makes him tick and makes him be Trevor Bauer, then go ahead and do it, and just get in line with the rest of the team, and let's go win another championship this year.
Andre, Mookie Betts had such a great impact on the team, even in spring training. Do you remember any teammate that kind of set the bar high for you guys in spring training? Maybe you were that guy at the end of your career, but you know, the players seem to always talk about how Mookie challenged them to practice at a high level.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any player in particular. I can remember, you know, Joe Torre, you know, once he came over, really just, maybe it was because, you know, he came from some successful Yankees teams there and had that cred with him. And you know, but his big thing was, you know, we're going to work. We're not going to work long. We're just going to work right and do it the right way the first time, or until we get it right. And we're going to work at a certain pace. And, you know, when we're out here, yeah, we're out here to have fun. We, you know, we're enjoying, we're catching up. But let's get our work done the right way, and we're going to practice, you know, like we're going to play, with that intensity, with that focus, with the fundamentals. And then everything will just fall in place, you know, by our natural skills, our natural abilities. And that's what I heard from, you know, first thing. That was the first thing Dave Roberts said to me when I showed up to camp last year, was how unbelievable you know, the words that Mookie spoke to the team, how he was just so forthcoming on what his goals, what his, you know, desire to get out of playing in L.A., having a career in L.A. was about. And that really was eye-opening for the rest of the teams, for, or, you know, rest of the team, rest of the players in the locker room to hear that. You know, a guy who obviously has all this talent ability is still going out there grinding away and figuring out a way to make, you know, get every single ounce, every single thing he can do to make himself the best player every day. And he wants to make the players around him the best players also, which is a you know, very unique characteristic of a championship player.
Hey, Dre, a lot of people are talking about the Dodgers, and now that they signed Trevor Bauer, they obviously have Mookie for years to come. The Corey Seager coming off a World Series MVP season.
is there going to be a hangover this year? And what's that going to be like? And for me, for last year, the pressure was on them, obviously, last year to go win it, and they did. And to me, that takes all of the pressure off of this year. Even though there's expectations, they won it last year, and they did what they were supposed to do. And, Dave, you remember this. We were on, and again, Fred's not here so he to defend himself, but I'm still going to talk about him. But he was in panic mode. And I remember you, Dave, even when they were down to the Atlanta Braves, there wasn't a worry. It didn't feel like it within the team either that they were going to come back and win that series. And it was just that level of confidence. Do you feel the same thing going into this year? Like, there's a level of confidence that is above any pressure that they might feel. And this team plays with confidence, not pressure.
I mean, Dave, I think we've talked about this back and forth, right? How many times have we had this conversation, Dave, me and you, on this? I think probably 30, 40. And right, at least. I think so. But, yeah, I think we've gone back and forth, Dave, on this. And, you know, I'll let you go real quick. But my biggest thing is everyone's going to have some type of hangover this year because everyone played an uncharacteristically different season last year than anyone's used to. So there'll be a little bit of a hangover for every team. The Dodgers have the advantage of having that good taste, that good, you know, that on their tongue, you know, that good feeling coming in, knowing that they're champions and knowing that they're set up even better this year to be champions again. I don't know what, I mean, that's what we've talked about.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, that leads me to my next question. Everybody's handing the Padres the NL West and maybe even the championship. Do you feel like they have to overcome that youthful exuberance and trying to do too much in those 19 times against the Dodgers? Do you feel like they're ready to take that next step and beat the Dodgers?
I'll tell you this right now. If they have a tough time beating the Dodgers with all the stuff they've added, it will be a tough mental battle from there to feel like they have enough to overcome if they face them down the road when it counts. Early on the season, if they win quite a, you know, they lose quite a few tough games and lose some series here and there, it's just going to only add more doubt into their, you know, into their psyche of facing the Dodgers. You know, they've added all these pieces, added all these things, and if the Dodgers keep coming at them, keep beating them in series, keep taking it to them, that's a big blow to your confidence right there.
Dre, I cannot let you go without talking about a story that Fred loves to tell on a regular basis. And it involves Fred being a catcher. Now, playing, I believe it was Little League. And
oh, don't do this, Rodney.
Don't do what? Don't do what?
Don't bring up that Fred alleges that he knows Andre's mom and dad.
No,
all know that's not true.
He doesn't know your dad. His dad, he said Fred missed a play at the plate. And Fred got his two innings in to play, and he played it behind the plate. He was playing catcher, and he missed a play. And he said he felt bad because he let the whole team down, especially your dad.
Oh, yes. I've heard those stories before.
No, you haven't.
I have. My dad.
Your dad doesn't even know who he is.
That's what I was going to ask. Does your dad even know who Fred is?
Yes, he does. They grew up together over there on the west side of Phoenix. Just because Dave doesn't have any friends doesn't mean no one else does, all right? Hey, but hey, Rodney, speaking of friends, RJ, your son, what
yes.
a great guy, what a great kid to be around in the locker room all the time. I had the best time, and I have the best time still getting hold of him every once in a while. And giving him a hard time about what's going on in the locker room, and we had fun all those years stealing stuff out of each other's locker to see how we could get under each other's skin, and it was a great time in that clubhouse doing that.
Dre, can I just say this, and I'm gonna say this on air because you were there when RJ first got there, and you know, as a young kid, and you know RJ, Dave, you know RJ too. It's not an easy thing going to into a clubhouse and have everybody around you. But Dre, you took him under your wings, and you brought him and you made him feel comfortable. You made him feel normal. And to this day, when people ask him his, you know, favorite Dodgers, your name is at the top of the list because you treated him like he was a little brother. You didn't hold back on him. You razzed him. You teased him. He felt like family, and you were the number one guy that interacted with him on a regular basis every single day, and he never forgets it and always talks about it, man. So as a dad, I'm just pointing out to you and letting everybody know how special you are to the Pete family and what you did for RJ.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, he was great. I'll share one little quick story about that, Dave and Rod. I don't know if you saw this, Dave, one day, but at the end of my rehab in 17, I was getting ready to go out on assignment to go to go start my rehab out in Rancho Cucamonga for the end of July, beginning of August there. And I get inside the clubhouse, getting ready to go out in the field and do my stuff. And I'm going through my locker, and like half of my stuff is missing in the locker. Okay. And then all of a sudden, I see all the clubhouse staff. You know, there's like 7-8 guys on the clubhouse staff in there. And they're all kind of just standing around looking at me. And then all of a sudden, here comes Rodney or RJ walking through the clubhouse, and he's wearing my full uniform, my batting glove, my helmet. And then they're like, all the clubhouse staff was like, RJ, what are you doing? RJ said he could fill in for you. He's like, you know, he can fill in. You're an old hurt guy. He can do as good of a job you're doing, so we're just going to have him go out and do your rehab for you. So it was pretty funny to see him walking through the clubhouse in my full getup and, you know, basically just took off. I don't think he took it off for the entire day.
No, he didn't.
Because I told him, I said, if you're wearing that, you better keep it on. And I was kept giving him a hard time. So I think he went out to even do his Bat Boy stuff before the game in my full unit. So it's kind of funny.
Now we know the story behind that because all, you know, 50,000 plus saw this Bat Boy wearing Ethier's uniform.
Yep, and that's exactly why. Because I told him, I said, you better not take my uniform off. If you take it off, I'm going to be mad at you. I said, so you don't like me anymore. And he's like, okay, I'll wear it. And I'm like, so it was a good time. And
wear your Rancho Cucamonga jersey.
Well, hey,
Dave, we're not here to hear stories about you, Dave. No one really cares.
What time do you want me over for dinner I'm here?
Yeah, do you let Bessay over for dinner?
I think he's taking me to Mastro's.
I do. I put it in the neighborhood doggy dish bowl out in front.
This is what always happens. I think I got him, and then he always gets the last word. All right, mic drop. Good job.
I love it. Dre, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
No, thanks.
Come on anytime, man. I appreciate it. And again, thanks for all you do for not only for the Dodgers over the years, but for my son RJ, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you guys, and always doing a great job covering the Dodgers, covering LA sports, and be on anytime you guys want. And thanks for letting Dave bum a ride on someone else's show again.